Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our great, albeit increasingly endangered, American way of life. On today's show, we take a deep dive into where else but day two of the Trump criminal prosecution proceeding in the courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan in New York City. We have some jurors selected. We're going to get into that. I'm also going to give you one of my theories as to what I think is one possible path forward for Donald Trump's defense attorneys in this particular case. I have an idea as to how this thing ought to go down. I'll give you all that and more in today's deep dive. And then later on the show, in today's closing argument, now that the dust has settled a little bit from yesterday's horrific incident in Brussels, Belgium, which I filled the listeners in about during yesterday's closing argument, this being the disruption of the National Conservatism Conference in Brussels, we have some more details about that, and we had a very interesting statement actually from the Prime Minister of Belgium. Yes, it did get that high up the food chain, so I want to update you on that and what I think should be the path forward for what happened yesterday. All of that and more later on in the show, but for now, as always, of course, it is time to go around the horn. We begin on Capitol Hill, where after much anticipation, House impeachment managers, which are Republicans, they would be the ones who walked over the articles of impeachment. And when I mean walk over, I mean they literally formally walked over. That's how this was done. You know, the cameras preening, they walked under the rotunda. They literally walked over from the floor of the House to the floor of the Senate, from the south to the north side of the Capitol, because that is where those two respective chambers are located. And the impeachment managers delivered, formally delivered and pronounced the articles of impeachment against Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. So if you recall, it took the House two attempts to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, but they finally did so on the second attempt. The efforts of those like the outgoing Congressman Ken Buck from Colorado and the outgoing Congressman Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, notwithstanding, they got Mayorkas on the second attempt. And now it is before the Senate. And the real question is, well, what is the Senate going to do? You have some constitutionalist stalwarts, those like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, who correctly and accurately have been arguing that the Senate has a duty and an obligation to hold an impeachment trial for Alejandro Mayorkas. They accurately point to the fact that Senate Republicans led by Mitch McConnell in 2021 in January even held an impeachment trial for Donald Trump for his nonsensical second impeachment, which was right on the eve of his not even being present anymore. It didn't even matter at that point, but they did anyway because it was the right thing to do, because when the House sends over impeachment articles, that's what you do. So that's clearly the correct path forward. Is Mitch McConnell this time going to fight hard enough to do whatever he can to make sure that an impeachment trial actually takes place? Chuck Schumer and Senate Democrats certainly have no interest whatsoever when it comes to putting Mayorkas on trial, because they know that putting Mayorkas on trial for high crimes and misdemeanors for his public breach of trust at the U.S. southern border, they know that doing so will expose the reality of the porous, beleaguered, and genuinely insane U.S.-Mexico border. They know that doing so will expose all of that for the American people and for swing state voters all across the country, and that is the last thing that they want. So it's going to be a showdown. I personally hope that they do hold this impeachment trial, as I said on TV just yesterday. Now, moving on, there was a big oral argument at the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. This is the Fisher case. This is the case involving a former Pennsylvania police officer by the name of Joseph Fisher, who is challenging his prosecution, He is a January 6th defendant. He is a January 6th rioter, and he is challenging the federal government's prosecution of him on a section of the U.S. Code that is known as 18 U.S. Code subsection 1512. And subsection 1512 was enacted as part of the sprawling Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which was a statute passed in the aftermath of the Enron accounting scandal. And specifically, subsection C2 of section 1512 makes it a crime to, quote, otherwise obstruct, influence, or impede any official proceeding. Now, they are attempting, that is, the defendants here, that would be Joseph Fisher, and he's the one bringing the case, but, you know, frankly, there are a lot of other people who are being charged on similar grounds. By the way, one of them happens to be Donald Trump himself. At least two of Jack Smith's charges in the D.C. probe actually pertain to 1512 as well. So directly relevant for Donald Trump's prosecution is the Fisher case that was heard yesterday at the U.S. Supreme Court. Who knows what might happen? Here's what Jonathan Turley tweeted, the well-known Fox News on-air commentator and law professor at George Washington School of Law. He tweeted this at 11:53 a.m. yesterday, quote, "The court just ended argument. The three liberal justices offered support for the government, and Justice Barrett seemed on the fence at points. It is hard to tell where Barrett may end up. However, there was clearly a skepticism from four justices, including Chief Justice Roberts." So, very good news, to be honest with you, if Jonathan Turley's report is anywhere close to correct. And I hope that it is correct. My instinct is that this definitely is a pretty severe stretching of the statute. There's a statute, for God's sake, that was passed in the context of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, an accounting, anti-accounting fraud statute. Really insane to try to stretch this to prosecuting people for being there at the U.S. Capitol and traipsing in because a door happened to be open for obstructing an official proceeding. You know, and there were some questions yesterday at the oral argument from the justices that really kind of clue you into how they're thinking about this case. Here's Justice Clarence Thomas. He says, quote, "There have been many violent protests that have interfered with proceedings. Has the government applied this provision to other protests in the past?" Pretty basic question, right? Well, unfortunately, here is what Liz Prelogar, the Solicitor General of the United States, who was defending these prosecutions, here's what she said. Quote, "I can't give you an example of enforcing it in a situation like this." Now, she says it's because she's, quote, not aware of circumstances ever happening prior to January 6th. General Prelogar, might I tell you about a little 19th century event called the Civil War? Oh, my goodness. These people make it out to be like January 6th being a 9/11 or Pearl Harbor level catastrophe. One person died, Ashley Babbitt. I mean, look, I'm not trying to downplay January 6th, but I'm through the roof at this point with people who are trying to make this out to be a quote-unquote insurrection. It was not that. And, you know, similarly, you had another question from Justice Sam Alito, another conservative stalwart. Quote, "What happened on January 6th was very serious, but we need to find out what are the outer reaches of this statute under your interpretation." He's trying to find just how far the government's view of this statute goes there. So it's an interesting issue of statutory interpretation. It ultimately comes down to this word otherwise and how far the word otherwise can get used there. But again, based on what I surmised from yesterday's proceedings at the Supreme Court, hard not to at least be cautiously optimistic about what went down yesterday. Finally, an absolutely insane case, it seems, out of the state of North Carolina. This is in the Court of Appeals of North Carolina in the state-level appellate court there. I was flagged of this case. I mean, normally a state-level case in North Carolina on a random Tuesday wouldn't be in my radar, but I was flagged by this case by the always excellent Roger Severino, who is a former Trump administration official. He was the director of HHS's Office for Civil Rights, Health and Human Services. He is a stalwart when it comes to issues of bioethics and the life of the unborn child and IVF and physician-assisted suicide and all that. Anyway, he is nowadays VP at the Heritage Foundation. He flagged this very troubling case called Happel versus Guilford County Board of Education and Old North State Medical Society Incorporated. And you know, it's probably easier if I just actually read part of Roger's tweet on this issue. So here's what Roger Severino had to say about this case. Crazy stuff. Brace yourself for what I'm about to say here. Quote, "North Carolina high school requires kid to get COVID test to play football. Kid shows up for the test and is instead forced to take a COVID shot despite stating his objection and no parental consent. The parents sue and they lose because the federal PrEP Act grants total immunity to people who administer the COVID shot for any harms or wrongdoings related to the jab, except for death or serious bodily injury due to willful misconduct. Roger Severino continues, quote, "The implications of this decision are stunning. School officials can call your kid to the nurse's office and threaten to flunk your child or threaten to cut him or her with a scalpel if they don't take the shot and there's no liability. They can literally slap your child if they resist the shot or make them undress for the, quote, convenience of the person administering it and no liability." This is batcrap crazy insane. I have to assume that this is not going to hold up on appeal to the North Carolina Supreme Court. But, you know, at a bare minimum, it just goes to show you that even in a right of center state like North Carolina, you're really going to have some real whack jobs there sprinkled throughout the state judiciary as well. Absolutely crazy stuff. What a horrible ruling if Roger's interpretation of what happened is even close to accurate. And I have to assume that it is, because Roger Severino is a former clerk to U.S. Supreme Court Antonin Scalia and is a brilliant legal mind in his own right there. So I have to assume that he's reading this ruling and the underlying law involved correctly. So really eye-opening stuff. Consider this to be firmly placed on my radar. It definitely needs to be on your radar as well. Okay, that's it for today's Around the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, it was day two of the Trump criminal trial in New York City yesterday. What went down? Well, we have some jurors, so that's a start. All that and more when we come back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. And where else would our deep dive be but in the courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan, the 15th story dingy and musty courtroom, based on those who have been there. I have not been there. That is his courtroom, where the former and perhaps future president of the United States, Donald Trump, is in court all week for the beginning of his criminal trial, for the beginning of his trial on charges of so-called hush money payments for fraudulent bookkeeping when it comes to the reimbursement of Michael Cohen for paying off Stormy Daniels. They allege that the Trump Organization improperly called this a legal retainer, legal services, whereas in reality it was a campaign finance violation. That's at least what we think the actual charges. Alvin Bragg has not exactly laid it all out for us. So what we learned from yesterday's proceedings is that seven jurors, they've actually already gotten seven jurors from the panel of 12. It's going to be a jury of 12 New Yorkers. They'll probably have up to six alternates in place as well. And it looks like that we actually know or have the identities of some of the seven jurors. Here is the report on what these seven confirmed jurors, these first seven, actually look like. So the first seated juror is originally from Ireland. He works in sales and has some college education. He reads the New York Times and the Daily Mail and watches some Fox News and MSNBC. So he's kind of all over the map politically based on that, hard to say. The second juror is an oncology nurse who lives with her fiance. She reads the New York Times and watches CNN. Well, that sounds like a lib to me. The third seated juror is a corporate lawyer. He's originally from Oregon. He gets his news from the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Google. Well, that's interesting. Corporate lawyer could definitely militate in favor of conservatism, but it definitely could not. I mean, I'm a former corporate lawyer myself. You have corporate lawyers from all over the map, but you at a bare minimum, you probably have some respect for enterprise and private business, which arguably militates in favor of being sympathetic towards Trump. Hard to say from just that description, though. fourth juror is an older Puerto Rican man who's married with adult children and two grandkids. He said that Trump, quote, makes things interesting, but didn't indicate any strong feelings about his personal politics. Hard to say. That really could go either way as well. The fifth juror is a young black woman who teaches English language in a public charter school system. She has a master's degree in education. Yeah, this definitely sounds like someone who is more likely than not to be liberal-leaning for multiple reasons already discussed so far. Certainly, getting a master's in education is a very, very strong proxy for liberal political beliefs. Currently, the education graduate programs in America are completely dominated by left-wing pedagogy. The sixth juror is a software engineer at a large broadcast company who recently graduated from college. She expressed no strong feelings about Trump one way or the other. She gets her news from the New York Times, Google, Facebook, and TikTok. Well, that definitely could go either way as well. You know, certainly for young women who just graduated from college, you're talking here about a 22, 23-year-old girl. I mean, more likely than not, based on that statistic alone, to be liberal, left of center, but again, hard to say. The seventh juror here is a civil litigator who is originally from North Carolina. He lives on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. He reads the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, New York Post, and Washington Post. He said about Donald Trump, quote, I don't know the man and I don't have opinions about him personally. I do follow the news. I'm not sure that I know anyone's character. So this is probably the most potentially auspicious of the seven based on what I see so far. This is someone who is a lawyer. Again, I kind of view the law as inherently somewhat of a conservative profession, but you have any number of liberal lawyers as well, so hard to say. But he reads the Wall Street Journal and, most interestingly, the New York Post. I find that very interesting. This is an Upper East Side guy, so he probably has money. That's a wealthy part of Manhattan. But nonetheless, he reads the New York Post. Maybe he's just trying to get an alternative perspective to the New York Times and other liberal media outlets. But the New York Post is a fairly strong proxy, I think, for right-of-center sentiments. So potentially the seventh juror, that civil litigator, is one to keep an eye on here. Interesting, though. Now, it's worth zooming out a little bit and just talking about the fact that this case, as we've discussed now on the show ad infinitum, is legally meritless in the extreme. And only one in three U.S. adults actually thinks that Donald Trump acted illegally in this case. I cannot emphasize that point enough. Turns out that based on a recent poll from the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, literally about one-third actually think that Donald Trump did something illegal. So that's probably a very, very high percentage of Republicans and a not insubstantial percentage of Democrats who think that he actually did nothing illegal in the hush money case. That's pretty powerful itself in today's extraordinarily polarized day and age. So I want to just then briefly give one possible theory of the actual case as to how Donald Trump's lawyers might be able to go about defending this thing if, and at this point it seems, when we get a little further along the trial proceedings. So if we think, and we do think, that Alvin Bragg's theory of the case is that it's fraudulent bookkeeping in New York State done in furtherance of a campaign finance violation, that is what we think it is, because Alvin Bragg has literally not told us exactly what his theory is. But if that's what we think it is, then here's the deal. Brad Smith is a former Democratic federal election commissioner. He was there. He was nominated by Bill Clinton. And he has been going around in the pages of the Wall Street Journal and in various other televised and audio interviews. He has been going around saying that the threshold for proving a campaign finance violation is extraordinarily high insofar as the following is true. Insofar as the prosecution must show, obviously beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond a reasonable doubt, because that's the standard, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the sole and exclusive reason for this money payment, this monetary payment, was to help the candidate get across the finish line in a campaign proceeding. Put another way, if there is any other reason whatsoever, there's any other reason whatsoever that could have possibly contributed to the money, then it's not a campaign finance it's not a campaign finance violation, and the prosecution's cases fail. So let's apply that to the facts of the case here. The allegation, we think, again, is that this $130,000 that Michael Cohen paid to Stormy Daniels as reimbursed by the Trump Organization, the theory of the case, we think, is that this amounts to a campaign finance violation because, and here's the real stretch and leap of logic, because it had the sole and exclusive purpose of aiding Donald Trump get across the finish line in the 2016 presidential election, which, of course, he did when he defeated Hillary Clinton. There are a lot of flaws with this theory. First of all, it is obviously the case that someone could engage in such so-called hush money and payments to a porn star to keep her mouth shut for any number of reasons. What if he just wanted to shield his children, including his beloved son, Barron, from the embarrassment of going through this sort of public ordeal? You know, what if he just wanted to help his marriage? What if he was worried that Melania would find out and be all upset about him? But there's an even more profound reason, I think, and it would be a ballsy argument for Trump's defense lawyers to make, but I happen to think that in this case, it probably might be a shrewd and prudent tactic. There's an even more, I think, compelling argument that Trump's lawyers can make, and here it is. What you basically would argue in court is you would say, well, there's actually a very obvious reason that Donald Trump didn't need to engage in this kind of shady payment from Michael Cohen to pay her off to boost his political chances, which is that you know what you're getting when you're getting Donald Trump. This is someone who has not exactly tried to hide from the limelight, from the cameras over the decades. He has led a very public, glitzy, and glamorous lifestyle. And there have been many women through the mix who we can all remember. Marla Maples, as to give you just one example there. You have Kara McDougal, another former Playboy playmate who might testify in this trial. She's from the late 1990s. Trump has been around the block when it comes to women, so to speak, there. And again, I'm not saying anything that you don't know. Trump does interviews from his penthouse apartment at Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue where, what do you see? You see Playboy magazine covers on around the freaking office, namely the one where I think he actually was might have been on the cover himself many years ago. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was campaigning in Iowa in early 2016, famously or infamously, you might say, referred to 2 Corinthians, not 2 Corinthians. You know, if you're a politician like a Mike Huckabee or a Rick Santorum, someone who is a very public-facing, earnest Christian whose entire political profile is modeled around your earnest, devout religiosity and Christianity, if you're that kind of politician, then maybe it might make more sense to engage in hush money to try to keep the woman quiet if you had a slip or a foible. But Donald Trump is not that character. Again, the reason that he beat people in the 2016 primary who are much more religious and frankly probably much more ethical in their personal lives than Donald Trump, the reason he beat them has nothing to do with the fact that he is a man of high personal ethics or virtue. It has to do with the fact that he is a bull in a china shop, that he's a bulldozer, willing to say uncomfortable things, that he's a big personality, that he's very funny, that he took this stance or that stance on immigration or trade or whatever. But it has nothing to do with the fact that he is like a particularly personally ethical or upstanding person. So, you know, that would be a ballsy argument for Donald Trump's lawyers to make. But I happen to think that it's one that would actually go a long way. Again, you just need a hung jury. You just need a mistrial. You don't need to convince every juror in the jury pool. You really just need to make sure that one votes to acquit. If there is anyone who is sane and reasonable in this jury pool, and based on what we just discussed, there are at least 2 lawyers, a corporate lawyer and a civil litigator. They probably are capable of approaching the law with something approximating earnestness and seriousness. So the way to win over at least one juror, I think, might be an argument along the lines of what I just said. So we'll see if they adapt that line and that logic. But for now, I'm just happy to try to get it out there for now. So that's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, we're going to go back across the pond. I'm going to update you on what happened in Brussels, Belgium yesterday. We discussed it on our show yesterday. We have some updates for you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. Well, as we discussed on the show yesterday, there was quite a little incident in Brussels, Belgium, on the morning of Tuesday, April 16th. So I'm a research fellow at the Edmund Burke Foundation, which puts on these National Conservatism Conferences. I have spoken at a number of them myself, including multiple here in the United States and also the 2022 NatCon conference in Brussels, Belgium, which, by the way, went off without a hitch. The whole thing was smooth from start to finish. But apparently that was not in the cards this year when the Edmund Burke Foundation and NatCon returned to Brussels this week to hold their second NatCon Brussels conference. So first of all, the venue that hosted us 2 years ago, Concert Noble, apparently bowed out. They caved to pressure. So they had to find a backup venue at the last minute, which they did. And then the backup venue caved. And then they actually had to find a third venue called Claridge. And the third venue happens to be in apparently a very, very far left part of Brussels, Belgium, which is already a very far left city. And you had the socialist mayor of this part of Brussels, a man by the name of Amir Kier, who sicked the police on the National Conservatism Conference there in truly thuggish, totalitarian, Communist Party tactics fashion. Sit the police there to go in and disrupt the proceeding. They walked out, but they barricaded the entrance. Eric Zemmour, the conservative nationalist politician in France, was barred from even going into the event to deliver his speech because he couldn't get past the police barricade. Any number of other attendees were barred from attending as well. Just a horrific look. This is Brussels, for God's sake. It's the belly of the beast of the European project, the belly of the beast of European Union-style liberal hegemony and globalism, and they can't even tolerate dissident speech. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And it is amidst that backdrop of cartoonish hypocrisy and just general disgust that the Prime Minister of Belgium, Alexander De Croo, who I certainly do not think is conservative himself, but I guess he's at least a somewhat sane person. This is what he tweeted yesterday after all this was going on there. He said, quote, "What happened at the Claridge today is unacceptable. Municipal autonomy is a cornerstone of our democracy, but can never overrule the Belgian constitution guaranteeing the freedom of speech and peaceful assembly since 1830. Banning political meetings is unconstitutional. Full stop." So that's a pretty good statement as far as it goes. But the real question right now, Mr. Prime Minister, is, well, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to sit there and hammer out a tweet from your iPhone, or are you actually going to do something about it? You should do everything in your power to remove this socialist thuggish hack, this man by the name of Amir Kier, who literally called the cops on my friends and cohorts who were over there putting on this wonderful conference. Are you going to get this guy out? Are you going to get him fired? Are you going to get him recalled? Whatever your particular positive law, your legal mechanisms are for punishment and repercussions, are you going to do something to get this man out of power in Brussels? That really is the question. If you don't go there, if you don't start getting into the talk and into the paradigm of actually punishing people for gross missteps like that, if you don't do that, then I'm not really sure that we're making any progress whatsoever. So I hope to see that, and then maybe we can talk. That's it for today's show. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to America on Trial with Josh Hammer. We'll be right back tomorrow morning.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.